Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 149 of Growth Marketing Today. This is your host, Ramley John, and I'm going to be talking about writing in this episode. Now, if you've noticed my Twitter account, @RamleyJohn, I've been tweeting more, and that's a way for me to practice my writing. And today, I have Roxine Key. She is a professional writer and marketer, and really, she's going to be sharing all about how to become great at marketing through becoming better at writing. Now, you can't be a good marketer if you're not a good writer. Content marketing, social media, and SEO are just some aspects of marketing that rely heavily on quality writing. Even marketers within teams that don't rely on content per se need to be able to clearly share their ideas, especially now that most of us are working remotely. Writing will also enable you to communicate ideas and message and benefits of the product right from the get-go. So in episode 149, you learn from Roxine, a content writer specialist, why templates and best practices are worth following. That's the first one. Second, the importance of framing marketing as a way to help people. And third, three tips to improve your writing. Before we get started, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode. Now, these folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. This episode of Growth Marketing Today is brought to you by Partner Stacked. It's G2's number one rated partner management platform. Fully support your partner marketing, referral, and reseller channel programs all from a single platform. Take the admin work out of your workflows and focus on partner success and scale. If you're ready to scale revenue through partnerships, visit get.partnerstack.com/GMT to book a free demo today or find the link in the description right now. Well, let's jump into my chat with Roxine. Everybody, this is Ramley John. Welcome to another episode of Growth Marketing Today podcast. So today I have Roxine. She is growth engineer at Convictional, a seller enablement platform. So Roxine, how are things with you today?
I'm doing well. I just came out from a walk. Good weather in Toronto today. How are you?
I am super, super excited to chat with you. We were just chatting about food, lucky me.
Of course.
Different things. I mean, before we jump into talking about marketing, I love for people just to hear something different and something unique about you. And you said you almost made it to the Canadian Olympics trial for swimming in 2016. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I've never met an almost Olympian.
Almost Olympian. I mean, just from that title, you know that I'm a marketer. Like that is copy that I have perfected over the years for my resume. So this was, I almost made it to Canadian Olympic trials for Rio 2016. So the trials would be around 2014, 2015. I guess the story behind that is, well, this touches on the Filipino background as well. I started swimming back in the Philippines. I think I was 9 years old and started like seriously competing around 13. So around 13, I made it to kind of the national team for the Philippines, the national kind of youth team. So I was swimming for national team for 4 years until I was ineligible. And at the moment, my family also immigrated to Canada. So I think back then there was no grade 11, grade 12 in the Philippines. It only went until grade 10. So I was like 17. And then we came to Canada right after I graduated high school. And I think I came to Canada and there was like, I didn't really have anything going for me. I was going into grade 12 last year of university. I had to get the grades to get into university. And then there was really, I couldn't really participate in extracurriculars because it was like the last year of high school. So I think swimming was the one that I really went hard on. So with like, leading up to kind of 2014, 2015, I was going to school, grade 12, and trying to like become a Canadian from a Filipino Chinese background. And then I was also training. So training for swimming, if there's swimmers out there or former swimmers, you know how crazy it is. It's 10 sessions a week, 8 to 10 sessions a week, 2 hours per session. So it's around 15 to 20 hours of training. So towards the end of that, I think So this is an eternity in swimming, but I made it within like 0.3 seconds of making the cutoff for Canadian Olympic trials, which is the senior nationals. Yeah, so that was kind of my almost made it.
Almost Olympian.
almost Olympian. We can call it that.
Yeah, for sure. That's super cool. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I usually don't ask how people get into marketing, but for a lot of people who are listening in and you're not familiar with this concept, a lot of Filipinos are nurses.
Yes, they are.
Engineers, or they start food. So for you yourself, how did you end up in marketing? And secondly, what does your parents think about that, about being in marketing?
Okay, there's two things here. First is I'm very thankful and happy that my parents didn't push me to go into like a medical field in general. They did try to push me to do accounting.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm glad they weren't. They didn't really push me in any direction. My parents are also business people, so when I wanted to start doing some businessy stuff in school, they were kind of, I would say, more okay with it than like a maybe normal Filipino Chinese parents. And the way I got into it was through blogging. And I think when I was in that time of my life in grade 12, when I was trying to figure out the school system here in Canada, I started looking for these study strategies blogs. And then eventually I got into the rabbit hole of, wait, these people are making money off of writing online. They're just making money off of these. So I got into the blogging stuff, and then I got into the scammy internet marketing world of like, oh yeah, you just have to like write these, like say these specific things and people will buy your product. So I was like in first year university or grade 12 here. So I was learning about marketing that way from like a very tactical standpoint. And then I guess that blogging and scammy internet marketing kind of go hand in hand. Like you have to be a little bit living on the edge if you want to make money online. And eventually I realized just that the fact that I like started my own blog and kept writing and realized, oh, there's actually this legitimate side of marketing called content marketing. Even content marketing, you can talk about like SEO, you can talk about hacks. That's also a little bit of a gray area. So I realized, okay, this is where I have a lot of skills. I might not necessarily agree with all the tactics everyone's doing. But this is a way for me to apply the skills I have, apply kind of my knowledge of how to create good writing, while also using it to get people to do stuff that maybe the other eyes would not want to do, or to get them to do stuff that would actually benefit them. So from scammy marketer to maybe not a scammy marketer.
I mean, with it's funny. I was laughing when you say the scammy marketing. I'm getting hit by a lot of ads from like Dan Locke or Russell Brunson or all these affiliate marketers. Like, are those ones that you ended up looking at, or other ones that there's some other ones that you've seen? That
I bought courses too. So I was victimized. I think there was this guy, Jeff Walker. He seems like a really nice guy. Walker is Russell Brunson. They're just very, I would say their strategy and their tactics are pretty legit. Like you'll actually learn marketing from them, especially funnels. They love talking about funnels. But it's just like, it's a bit too pushy for me, a bit too aggressive of like, if people really need and want what you have, I don't think you have to put so many ads, send so many emails. If you're meeting people right where they are, maybe sometimes it's the wrong timing and you're pushing someone to buy a course that might not be the right time for them, i.e. when I was in high school buying their courses.
Right. That makes a ton of sense. And you really got into writing. Like you're now one of the mentors for David Perel's course called Rite of Passage. I mean, you talked about good writing. Like, can you talk a little bit about what good writing is? Like you're a mentor of this writing course. So you must know. Let's go the other way and say, what is bad writing? Like, what does bad writing look like for you?
I think there's two sides to this. One is what's bad writing for you, and one what's bad writing for other people. Okay. So to turn that around, what's bad writing for me is if I write something and I don't really know what I'm trying to say while I'm writing it.
Right.
And I'm still trying to figure things out. So most of my drafts come out that way. I had no idea. I'm just trying to figure things out. That's why I'm writing it. So that's where the editing process comes in. If I clear out kind of my thinking process and make it seem like I knew exactly what I wanted to say as soon as I sat down. That's kind of my bar for good and bad writing for myself. Like, does it seem like there was exactly one idea? Were they able to kind of support that with arguments and stuff like that? And it doesn't even feel like I was thinking through it. From the other side of like bad writing for like from other people's perspective, I guess when I think about other people's writing, it's like there's this saying about clear writing is clear thinking. So if someone was able to convey a very like complicated topic or a topic that everyone is talking about, but maybe no one has just put it into words, they were able to put that into words that are very simple, very clear, not necessarily long, not necessarily using, I don't know, like words that you wouldn't usually talk or use in conversation, then that is good writing. Like bad writing is basically if like someone's just trying to fluff up the piece, if someone's trying to sound smart, if they're trying to, I don't know, just be like other people and make it super long just for the sake of making it long.
Interesting. I mean, okay, this is a little bit of a tangent. But something, a writing just came out a few days ago that kind of exploded on Twitter from Basecamp, right? And all right, so you're familiar with it.
A little. I think I read through it, yes.
All right, please tell me what you think about that. They quoted Huxley and, you know, what if you recall, first of all, how did you react to that as somebody who meant there's a rite of passage? Like, what is your reaction to that piece that came out from Jason Fried?
So I'm not going to comment on the actual ideas in the piece, but let's talk about the writing. In general, I think Jason Fried and DHH, I don't know how to say his last name, so I won't try. Right. They usually are one of those people who are very clear, very succinct writers. And I'm not going to pull out the article right now, but if I remember right, how they did it was, or how Jason Fried did it, he started with like an initial point of we're changing a lot of things in Basecamp.
Yeah.
And immediately you're sucked into it, whether or not you know about Basecamp. And then each piece was, as online writers should, as like online writing should be, it's very easy to read. I think they used, so Hey.com, their email service provider, or email, I don't know, just their email client. They have this little blogging platform built on top of it. So that makes it easy to read. And then they broke it up as well. So it was easy to read. Therefore, it was easy to make people angry because people actually read through the whole thing. I realized with that article, the farther down you read, the more controversial the opinions were. So that's a good and a bad thing. Yes, with Basecamp, they're always trying to be against something or for something. So if their marketing goal for that was to get a lot of free marketing, then I'm pretty sure they succeeded.
Interesting. That's a good one. I love how you twisted it around. You not twisted around, but you saw the good out of the... Any normal person would be like coming out with pitchforks and they're... And it's like, this is terrible. Like, I love how you really like highlighted the good stuff about this. I mean, let's jump into something that you suggested we talked about, and you were already talking about this, about the importance of really making sure that your post doesn't come across as fluffy or scammy. One of the things that I see a lot in terms of content is best practices or listicles, or here are top five things that, you know, this... templates or what things like that. One of the things you suggested was like often templates and best practices are really not worth following because at that point they're not best practices anymore. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like why aren't there like good, like why, what's good and bad about like best practices in terms of like for, especially when it comes to marketing?
I think and marketing is an interesting subject in that once you get to the best practices, that means that you're not getting the maximum effectiveness out of a specific campaign or tactic already. because everyone's already doing it. And I believe it's Andrew Chen who wrote an article about the law of shitty click-throughs of, in the beginning, the first growth marketer, think his Sean Ellis at Dropbox. He basically, there's this whole case study already about how Dropbox made this video and that gave them like a waiting list of, I don't know if it's 15,000, someone just correct me on that, but gave them a wait list. And it's like, okay, suddenly there's these people using these product plus growth tactics and using that for customer acquisition. By the time Andrew Chen put that into a case study or talked about how growth marketer is the first, is the new VP of marketing, everyone's already doing that. Everyone's putting, for example, Hotmail. The way Hotmail became big was they put like PS sent from Hotmail. And now you see send from BlackBerry, send from iPhone. So by that point, everyone's using those tactics. By the time they become case studies, everyone's doing it. So the market gets saturated. I guess I should put a caveat of, it's not that they're not worth following. It's that they're not as effective. And if you're later in the game, then you're just playing catch up to everybody else who's using maybe new campaigns, who's being more innovative. But it is worth knowing what the best practices are. It's worth knowing the history of marketing or the campaigns. One, so you don't make the same mistakes that people have made in the past. And two, so then you can build on top of kind of standing on the shoulders of these marketing giants in the past and innovating off of that. So it's worth knowing, but not necessarily worth executing anymore.
Interesting. That's a good way to put it. It's worth knowing, but not worth executing. You should tweet
possibly
that.
Not worth executing. Possibly.
Possibly. Well, you want to be controversial. It's always. You know, it's always.
Hey, Filipinos, we don't like being controversial. We like sticking to our karaoke.
No, right. That's a really, really, like I said, you should tweet that. That's a really tweetable quote right there. So if that's not the way, one of the things you suggested when we were chatting, one of the topics you suggested is really focusing on how your campaign or your marketing can help people change their lives. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like if best practices is not, it's good to know, but we're not worth executing. What is the opposite of that? What should growth or marketing folks really be focused on?
I think any marketing workshop you go to, the first step that they, or like any marketing consultant that you talk to your marketing agency, the first thing they do or they should be doing is customer research. And basically when I say marketing should be a way to help people make a positive change in their life, I'm just referring to, it's more like a strategic North Star for your customer research. Of, do you actually know your customer? How well do you know them? When you write your copy, is it words from their mouth and meeting them where they are? Or are, as a company, which tends to happen a lot, are we just saying words that we talk about internally and then putting that in our marketing and like figuring out if people actually say that? And kind of talking about the previous, I think, point that we talked about around scammy marketers is like, there's marketing is a way to persuade people, but the good marketing is a way to make people make the positive change in their life at the right time in their life. So I think like now talking about this right now, like I never thought about it before. I think that was what got to me with internet marketers who are very in your face, who talk about their Lamborghinis on YouTube and stuff like that. I mean, not to shoot any shots, but we all know who those people are.
Yeah.
It's that, yes, they're trying to get people to get what they want, but is that really what people need at that moment in their life? Like, for example, if it was like when I was in high school and university, I was seeing all these courses, all these people who are making passive income, as they love talking about. And then they're trying to sell these ebooks, these courses. They don't really care if this person is a student, if this person is a young professional, if this person is 40 or 50 years old and looking for a change in their life. They just want to make the sale. So that's what I mean when it's about making a positive change in people's lives. Whether you're selling to consumers or to businesses, is this the right time for them? As marketers, are we ready to say no and say, okay, maybe you can just get into our email list and then later on you can buy from us, but right now is not the time for you. So being very customer-centric about it.
I really like that. Like some of the and it goes back to sometimes the best marketers I know have background in sales And the best salespeople I know will tell you that, hey, our product's not the best for you. You should go over there and buy our competitor. Is that what you mean by that? Where like you're willing to tell no, you're actually not good for our product. But you know, being open and being transparent about that.
Yeah, I think there's a very long-term view to this. It's just being customer-centric in general, and trying to help them make that change, even if it means that they grow their business first before they start working with us. Like, for example, at Convictional, like our best buyers are enterprise retail, like not a lot of Shopify sites would fall into that category of working with us and being successful. And I think that's one of the things of, you know that someone is a good salesperson if they're impartial and if they're willing to say no for now in return for possibly in the future, a longer term relationship.
When we come back in just a moment, Roxanne will share 3 tips to improve your writing. Before I go on, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode. The PartnerStack, G2's top-rated partner management platform, is the only partnership platform built for SaaS, designed to deliver predictable revenue and accelerate growth for businesses and their partners. Companies like Intercom, Webflow, and Monday.com use PartnerStack to manage and scale their programs, automating partner onboarding, training, payments, and more to empower their partners' success. The past year alone, partners in the PartnerStack network have generated over $100 million in revenue for programs on PartnerStack. Fully support your partner marketing referral and reseller channel programs from a single platform. Now take the admin work out of your workflows and focus on partner success and scale by automating partner onboarding, attribution, engagement, payouts, and compliance. Now tap into the only global B2B partner network supporting over 500,000 partnerships and counting. If you're ready to scale your revenue to partnerships, visit get.partnerstack.com/GMT to book a demo today or find the link in the description. Well, let's jump back into my chat with Roxanne. I mean, you're talking about Convictional. Your role, Tyler, is interesting. Your role is growth engineer. So I got to ask, what does that mean? Like, what is your primary, not just responsibility, what is the primary thing that you're focused on as a growth engineer at Convictional?
Well, I think I should be the last person to be called an engineer. but it's basically just a growth marketer. So I was the first marketing hire, started working at Convictional around September 2020. And Convictional, as you mentioned in the intro, is a seller enablement platform. And this is a term that we're trying to coin, seller enablement. Basically, we help online retailers start and grow their marketplaces online. And I guess with that, it's almost like growing any other platform or marketplace, whether it's like Airbnb, whether it's Uber. There's always the demand side and the supply side. For Airbnb, it was rental units and people renting. With Uber, it was drivers and people who wanted to get rides. For us, it's buyers and sellers, like retailers that sellers or brands can put their products, put their assortments into. And then, yeah, you have buyers who have the audiences who sell that. So being working on growth at Convictional, it's kind of like trying to grow two companies within one. Because on one hand, there's the marketing side for the buyers of how do you reach enterprise retail executives? For example, retail execs at Walmart, at let's say Target, well, not Target here in Canada, but there's Walmart, Indigo, Chapters, in the US is Barnes & Noble. How do you get to these people? That's on the buyer side. Then the seller side, brands that want to get into kind of the big retailers. And that can be DTC brands, that can be older classic brands like just off the top of my head, I don't know, like Gucci, if they wanted to get into Walmart, I don't know. But those kinds of sellers. So how do you attract brands and how do you attract the marketplaces that they can sell into? That's kind of my main mandate in Convictional.
Interesting. And that is, when you say engineer, you are engineering growth for it, right? Figuring out was it that those buyers, like, what do they really want, and aligning content and everything else. Are you in charge of specific channels, or are you doing everything, ads, content, events? Like, what are some channels that you're in charge of? Are you in charge of everything?
Technically, I am, because I am the first and only current marketing hire. But I guess relying on my skills in content marketing, that's the biggest channel that we're going the hardest on right now. Kind of alludes to that long-term play of getting to people where they need to be or when they need to hear about us. I guess with ads, it's a little bit more in your face. Yeah. And as a startup, we have to be very careful about about resources as well. So content marketing has been the biggest mandate for me since I started. And I touch a little bit on product marketing as well. At least the basic product marketing of messaging, website, feature launches. So I would say it's like a 70% content marketing, 30% product marketing split right now.
Cool. I want to talk a little bit more about marketing, writing when it comes to marketing. I forgot where I read this, but it says there's no more important skill for your career than writing. Good writing indicates clear thinking, whether you're a designer, developer, marketer, entrepreneur, and salespeople. And something that I've been taking to heart, my background is in math and computer science.
So. Oh, you should be the engineer. You're the real engineer.
And I'm like, I need to improve my writing. And for people who are tuning in, I wrote a book about user onboarding. It's been something that I've been really trying to improve. So for people who are tuning in and they're like, do I really need to learn how to write? Like, how does your experience in writing and blogging like kind of help you become a better marketer?
There's many ways we can talk about this. The first is that usually when people say writing is the most amazing tool, this is the number one skill. Usually you see it on Twitter, and usually most of the people there are writers good at writing. So even as a writer, I would say, take it with a grain of salt. There's probably like a lot of truth in that. But there's many ways to figure things out, which is the primary way that writing helps me. You mentioned in the quote of clear writing is clear thinking. And I don't know if you have a different way to get to the clear thinking portion of it, then by all means, if it means talking to people and not writing about it, totally fine. But I guess when it comes to marketing, it's writing is a very important skill. But it's only because it helps you figure things out. As far as, let's say, writing copy, figuring out messaging, figuring out positioning, writing emails, all of that, the end product is like something you can read, something other people can read. So I think to that point, it's very important. But if you can be a clear thinker without having to be a writer, like, writers know that writing is hard. So then more power to you. Lucky you.
Yeah. I imagine somebody trying to communicate through like drawing or like symbols or something. I'm not entirely sure you're right. One of the best ways, especially with remote work now, how do you run a remote company or like when everybody's home and not in an office, when you're not communicating your ideas really well, right? So I want to talk a little bit more about writing then, in terms of like how, so you've said why it's important, right? I'm curious about your tips for marketers and for people in general who are listening in. How do you improve writing? And I'm going to guess just write. But is there any other tips, particularly where do you start? Like, there's a blank page in front of you, a blank Google Doc, a blank Microsoft Word. Where do they start in terms of like getting better at writing?
That's perfect, because you just basically teed me up, and I was going to say that you don't start with a blank page.
Okay, cool. Cool, right?
I think that's my phone. I don't know if you can hear in the recording.
I can cut that out. No worries.
All right, perfect. I'll just wait for it to finish ringing.
No problem. I mean, it's not live.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay, I think we're good. I think when it comes to writing and becoming a better writer, Yes, technically, it's just about writing more. I would say it's about publishing more as well, so that people can see your writing and you're kind of, you have the end state of this is the definition as product marketing, like, or product people, you know, about definition of done. When you hit publish, it's edited, everything that's done. And when you talked about starting from the blank page, like, I am a huge note taker. I have a bullet journal. I have morning pages. I have an Evernote, which is fully automated on the back end with Readwise. Shout out to that app. Any article I read, podcasts I listen to, even YouTube videos that I take notes on, all get saved into Evernote automatically. So then, for example, if I want to write an article on recent article that I wrote about was retail marketing platforms, I can search for the exact terms that I want to write about on my Evernote. And then all of the relevant articles I've read in the past, including PDFs, just get surfaced. And that's where I start my writing from, versus just a blank page, which is very terrifying, even for someone who does writing for a full-time job.
So I love that. You get prompts, get ideas, read, write. I also use that. So then when do you find time to, like, what is your suggestion to for people to get into the habit of writing? Like, do you have systems in place to actually, you know, when you drink your coffee, I write a few hundred words. Like, imagine somebody who's never written before and just, like, getting started. They have prompts now. How do they actually get into the habit of consistently writing?
Okay, first, is this writing for personal, let's say a blog, or writing for work if they're doing copy or content marketing? Because it's different. My process is different.
Let's do both. I mean, there are some people listening in right now who are writing they're improving their writing personally first, and then there are marketers who are trying to improve their writing for work.
Okay, you have to remind me to get into the work one, because if I might go into the personal one, I might never come back to the work one. So personal one, I would say, with that in mind, with that end goal of publishing online or publishing somewhere in mind, I would actually tell someone to start journaling first, and blocking out time, 20, 30 minutes, just to journal, write 2 to 3 pages about what's going on, what they're thinking about. And then eventually having that journal time slowly transition, organically transition into writing on the screen or writing an article or a blog post. Most advice out there is just dump it on the page. But with personal writing, I really believe that it's about paying attention to what you pay attention to. And that's where the journaling part comes in. For example, right now, one of the things I'm really paying attention to and has been for the past quarter is my morning routines of which parts are negotiable, which parts are non-negotiable for me, and testing those out. And that's what I've been journaling about. And so the next time I sit down to write an article, I actually have pages of my journal already. I might have made notes in my Evernote. And then when I sit down, I already know what the point is that I'm trying to make of, okay, these are my negotiables, these are my non-negotiables. That's what the article is going to be about. So I think with personal writing, the main thing is about figuring out what is going on in our head, what we're trying to say. And that takes more time than, let's say, writing an article for work, like a listicle.
Interesting. All right. So that's a personal side. Let's go back to the work side. Let's say you are trying to improve your writing for work, whether that's email or a blog or copy for the site. Like, what would be your tips for folks who that's their job?
Yeah, I think with content marketing or product or writing messaging, the biggest untapped resource that professional writers don't use in marketing is other people. Whether it's a subject matter expert to help you write an article on a topic that you absolutely have no expertise about. And that's my thing with, like, B2B marketers. We're basically paid to write about topics we're not experts on. Like, literally, that's everything we're told to do. But we still have to find some sort of expertise to add to that article. So subject matter experts, when it comes to messaging, it's straight up just customer conversation and using the customer's exact words, exact terms in copy. And that just makes copy a lot more powerful than if we just try to get things out of thin air.
It makes a ton of sense. I mean, thank you for sharing those tips. You shared tips about personal and how to get that better. And then you have tips on how to improve the work writing and copy for that. I want to start wrapping up, and we've talked about writing and marketing and content so far in the last half an hour. If you can summarize it and if you can give like one or two pieces of advice you want to share to marketers who might be listening in right now, or founders who are interested in marketing their product or their service, what would be the one or two pieces of advice that you'd like to share with them, whether that's something that you've talked about just now or something that we haven't even touched upon so far?
I think there's a couple. First is improve, not prove. And the second is action then contemplation / reflection. And so the first one, improve. Okay, it's not improve, not prove. It's improve, don't prove. Because I think when it comes to, let's go to the micro. If we're testing marketing channels, marketing campaigns, a lot of times we have a hypothesis that we're trying to prove, but it might not necessarily be right. And we have to be open to the fact that we will be wrong, or just accept the fact from straight up that we are going to be wrong. The hypothesis is there and it's meant to be almost broken. And in the macro of improving, not proving, with marketing, a lot of the times we're saying, okay, our product is the best in the market. Our product is different. We're always trying to prove that we are better. But what if we just improve the campaigns? What if we just improved our approach? What if we just talk to our customers more, never let our messaging be like one and done, and just tweak it and continue to work on it every day? So whether it's marketing or my personal life, that's kind of a little mantra that I have on my desk right now of, I'm not trying to prove who I am. I'm trying to improve who I am. Mm-hmm. So works for marketing, works for personal life as well. And the other side is action and reflection. I think depends on your personality type. You could be more of an action-oriented person or more of a reflective person. And it's a spectrum. Some of us are too much on one side. I'm usually too much on the reflection side. If you're a perfectionist, you want to make sure that the product is perfect conceptually in your head before you do anything. The thing I've learned that, especially with marketing, especially with working at a startup, it's about executing. Let's say giving yourself like a 10% margin for failure, accepting that you will fail, and then just going for it and figuring out the learnings from there, which kind of also helps with what we talked about before about the law of shitty click-throughs and being innovative in marketing. For just constantly testing new things, there will be new campaigns, new ideas that will 100% work that no one has ever done before. But that only comes from acting and then reflecting. Yeah.
I love it. It seems like you like rhymes. improve, then prove. It's because it's easy to remember, right?
It helps me remember. For sure. Yeah, it's more for me.
It's a good mnemonic device to remember things. Is improve, not prove, and action and reflection.
This could be the beginning of my life coaching career.
It could be, or a book, right?
Oh my gosh.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Growth Marketing Today show. One final question, where can people find out more about you? I mean, this is your time to share any work that you have, any call to actions that you want to share for people that want to just follow along with what you're working on.
Mm-hmm. I think for personal writing, it's in roxyandkey.com. I write about productivity, note-taking, writing about writing, basically, and just a lot of my interests as well. I will be restarting my newsletter again soon after a little bit of a break. So that's roxyandkey.com. And then for work, if anyone is interested in kind of retail, enterprise retail, business-to-business marketplaces, we publish 1 to 3 articles every week around those topics, whether you're a DTC brand or an executive enterprise retail brand, you can find a lot of really good stuff at convictional.com. Yeah, and those are the two main places I'm in.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Roxine. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode. Super excited. I learned a ton from Roxine. Now, I just want to, before we end, thank the sponsor for this episode. Now, this folks help cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. This episode of Growth Marketing Today is brought to you by Partner Stacked. It's G2's number one rated partner management platform. Fully support your partner marketing, referral, and reseller channel programs, all from a single platform. Take the admin work out of your workflows and focus on partner success and scale. If you're ready to scale revenue through partnerships, visit get.partnerstack.com/GMT to book a free demo today or find the link in the description right now. If you'd like to support the show, you've been getting a ton of value from it. There's three easy ways. First of all, subscribe if you haven't already done so and tell a friend about the show. This is how most shows grow, is through word of mouth. Second, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if you're not using Apple Podcasts, 70 to 80% of the show's listeners are from there, and leaving a review helps more people get to know about the show. And third, you can subscribe to the mailing list at growthtoday.fm, where I share updates about my life, but I also share updates about this podcast so you don't miss out. Well, that's it for this episode. This is your host, Ramley John. Keep safe, and as always, keep on growing.